New Year on this nice balmy January morning. Roll call, please.
Bruce Rinker.
Here.
Yvette Itu.
Here.
Dan Moore.
Here.
Three members are present, which constitutes a quorum.
Join us in the pledge, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
So we have some business, organizational business to take care of first. And organization of the board is, oh, I'm sorry, swearing in is first. I'll shut up.
Let's get together.
Yeah.
All right.
I, please state your name.
I, Yvette Itu.
Do hereby swear.
Do hereby swear.
That I will support the Constitution of the United States of America.
That I will support the Constitution of the United States of America.
And the Constitution of the State of Ohio.
And the Constitution of the State of Ohio.
And that I will faithfully, honestly, and impartially discharge the duties.
And that I will faithfully, honestly, and impartially discharge the duties.
As a member of the Board of Park Commissioners.
As a member of the Board of Park Commissioners.
Of the Cleveland Metropolitan Park District.
Of the Cleveland Metropolitan Park District.
This I promise to do as I shall answer unto God.
This I promise to do as I shall answer unto God.
All right, congratulations.
Just a point of order, how come federal and state laws are excluded from the oath?
We got the Constitution, so.
Yeah, two of them.
We could add those in there for the next round.
Anyway, I think we need a motion for our new composition. Rose, do you want to state the order or how do we?
So as my first order, I'll move to organize the board. And recommend action that Dan T. Moore be nominated as president of the board for 2024 and Bruce Rinker and Yvette Itu as vice president of the board for 2024 and appoint Brian M. Zimmerman as the chief executive officer and secretary and to serve in his official capacity on the boards of Destination Cleveland, Flats Forward, Northeast Ohio Sustainability Community Consortium, iHeart Media Local Advisory Board, and the Achievement Centers for Children, and to continue the appointment of Wade Steen as the Chief Financial Officer and Treasurer. So motion?
Do I have a second?
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Next, the appointment of legal counsel, Rose.
Thank you, Brian. This is the going into the third year of the RFP that was issued in October of 2021. And so the rates will remain the same. And we really have no changes to the panel of counsel that we utilize on an as-needed basis throughout the year. And you'll find all of the categories and firms listed there.
I'd like to call for them to call a motion. Yes.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you.
Well, let's see. Can we have the an approval for the minutes?
For December 14th, yes. Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. The financial report, please, Wade.
Thank you, Dan.
Okay, wow, that's a lot brighter than it used to be. Okay, well, a few highlights on the calendar year 2023. In summary, we had a good year. You can see revenues were up about $39.6 million. That's 28.8%. Expenditures were up 14.5%, just $15.1 million. A net increase of $24 million, but you can see the bulk of that, if not all of it, was just reinvested in capital expenses, capital equipment, and land acquisition. So it's not as if we had money that was just sitting idle, was being put to use in terms of land acquisitions and capital. But all in all, the Metro Parks had a very, very good year at its consolidated level. Now we'll look at a couple of the individual performances. The zoo I did want to raise up at the top. You can see that general admissions for the zoo last year were up 6.6%. When you look at the subsidy, it runs about even. The subsidy for the zoo has run between 30 and 31% the last 2 years, very stable. It's doing extremely well. And I did highlight what the capital construction expenses were. We've talked about this throughout the year, but I thought as a year end, it'd be good to remind everyone about $4.4 million of the 8.4 was for Tropical Bears. The PCA roof was another $2.2 million. The zoo administration renovation had about $500,000 of lag on cost that had started in 22, and then a variety of other projects. But the bulk of it was Tropical Bears and the PCA roof. Golf, we've said this throughout the year, they had an excellent year. Greens fees were up 14.6%. Rounds played, when you look at all of our golf courses, were up 17% last year. The most rounds played, or the highest increase, was at Seneca. Seneca's rounds played were up 23%. So
wow,
with that much golf being played, it's going to drive revenues up. Total revenues were up 20.2%. Total expenses were up, the $1.3 million, 15.9%. So you net an increase of $810,000. And I like to look at that. We were looking at that in finance. So that 4.3% margin, revenues going up more than expenses, 4.3% seems like a small percentage, equates to $800,000. So the golf team should be complimented. They did a very good job of keeping expenses down, and we just had a lot of golf being played. Here, $4.3 million in capital construction expenses last year. Almost all of it was at Manikiki. $3.9 million of the $4.3 was tied to the Manikiki golf course. I did want to point out Sleepy Hollow was the best performing golf course. All golf courses performed well, but revenue year over year was up 60%. So they went from $508,000 to $813,000 in operating revenue. The capital's below the line, but they did extremely well. So they didn't have the most rounds played, but they did have the highest percentage increase in net revenue, net operating expense. Enterprise, concessions are up 31.9%. That's almost all Merwin's, which we'll see on the next slide. Again, total revenues are up 17.7%. Total expenses are up 15.4%. I've said this often. When this goes up 17 or 18%, that goes up 15%. That's a recipe for success. We're up $173,000 on the enterprise operation consolidated for the year.
What is other on that? Can you go back to that?
Sure. That's chalet, parking, other things like that. I'm sorry, Commissioner Moore. I usually footnote that, but it's chalet, parking, and all of those other types of operations. They're not dock and they're not concession, so it's everything else.
And how much of that roughly do you think is parking?
Of that, parking is, I want to say it's about $50,000 a month. I can get you the exact number. I would say it's probably a fourth of it.
Okay. Thanks.
Uh-huh. Then I did want to highlight Merwin's Wharf, only because when you look at the year-over-year performance, we can look at all the detail, but when you go from a subsidy of 108 to a net profit of almost $269,000, you are definitely going in the right direction. So you can just see, again, there, as I looked at the performance of all our individual operating units in the enterprise group, I saw none that really raised up questions or caused concerns. Some were a little bit better than the prior year, some were not as good as the prior year, but very close. All in all of our enterprise operations operated well.
So with Merwin's, is it basically, excuse me, post-COVID, and there are just that many more people now downtown and using?
Essentially, yeah. I mean, it's, I don't want to use the words normal anymore, but we've definitely seen a return. The summer weather really helped. Mm-hmm. When you have a rainy weekend, you kind of lose the patio. So if the patio stays open, we have a much better opportunity to
so that,
yep.
Yeah. But that restaurant would have never been built if we didn't subsidize it.
And I think, you know, from a big picture standpoint, the team should be commended. I mean, they had their eye on the prize the entire year of really understanding the profit and loss statements, and they did everything they could to, you know, maximize and make sure that we were running in the black.
Did the days open change? Did it go from like 6 to 7 days or 5 to 6 days open?
I don't believe we changed that because the model, we're still struggling with staffing. So yeah, we're still closed a few of the days a week. So it didn't necessarily change that dramatically.
Okay. We basically have more dirt down in that peninsula. That's changed. Does that have an impact directly on Merman's? Do we see that yet, or is it still too diffuse?
I think it would be a stretch to say that we're seeing that impact quite yet, but I think with the culmination of the boat docks, and they haven't quite performed exactly because I think people are still trying to find, you know, how they work, you know, along the river. The Irishtown Bend redo, I think, is definitely going to, you know, lend itself to seeing progress along the way.
Sure.
From a construction standpoint, to see where it was to what it is now is a really dramatic change. Knowing the fact that the trails are working on, you know, completion, I think that will certainly help. The towpath, you know, ending in Canal Basin Park and that essentially being done. The other thing is Center Street Bridge is now open, and that was closed for a good period of time, which limited some access as well.
But that's all going to be pretty well consolidated in the next few years. It's going to be sea change, I think.
And if you haven't driven down there lately off of Carter Road, I mean, the amount of construction that's coming out of the ground is there's going to be a lot more people residing in that particular area. Correct.
It's exciting. Thank you.
And then, Dan, you'd ask about parking. So there's parking. It's worth just under $500,000 a year.
Yeah, I see.
So these would be the things that would fall into other, the chalet, parking, things of that nature that wouldn't be picked up in other places. And then I did want to, we don't always talk about the nature shops, but I thought this was an important story to tell because you can see that revenues are up on the top end, 30.4%. Again, I say slight subsidy, they were just not generating, making money given what their costs were. This year, they generated money. And these really neat ties that President Moore and I are wearing today can be purchased through the nature shops. The Metro Parks ties. So those are things that you can get there. Kudos to that team because they've really done a great job of turning this thing to a point where it was not making money or being profitable to the point that it is being profitable. My sense is that next year will be even a better year.
I just want to say I stopped at a couple of the pop-up shops and I think they were very successful. So if that's a new thing, I think we should continue doing that.
Thank you, Commissioner. Yeah, I turned that off. There was an expense at the bottom of $21,000 on capital equipment. And that's related to the truck that was outfitted so they can do the pop-up shops. And so that was what their capital expenditure was.
Can I go back?
Yes.
Going back to Manikiki and the golf, just the math of
the individual golf course?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's going to be difficult with revenue to be able to justify that capital expense, isn't it?
I don't know if it'll be difficult to justify it. Some of these capital expenditures need to be made and they're going to be made once and they'll, for example, the structure will be there for 20 or 30 years. So it's a long-term investment. But yes, it's just work that had to be done.
Yeah, I see.
So on, just to pick up on that though, and it's not to be cavalier at all because having net revenue is always a good thing, but we have to remember too, we're a park, not a business. And so a certain amount of subsidy is I think to be expected, whether it's long term or short term. I think the real measure has to be what are we delivering to the public. As a reminder, I mean, it's just, we always have to keep that in mind.
I think you're right. And golf is something that is a sport that isn't like boating, where there's a certain amount of wealth involved in boating. But we are competing with local golf courses, so we want to be available, but that does seem like a pretty steep. If you were looking at it as a payback, I think that would be difficult. I think in the case of the boats, I think that's more complicated because you have these long-term investments, you know, being on the waterfront, that you have to somehow capitalize, and it comes in big chunks. And that's, and that's a little bit like this, but $3 million is a lot of money to spend on something that.
A lot of deferred maintenance, pardon the pun.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's, you, when you look at an irrigation system install, you're talking about something that's going to be there for 30 to 35 years. The HDP pipe that we're putting in the ground is up to 50. So when you look at how we're trying to, you know, basically monetize this over time, because of the way we eat the apple, we eat it all at one time versus taking it out as a depreciation schedule over the entire. So you're seeing it as a load, which I think is optically just different. When you look at the maintenance facility that was there, it was the worst in the, graded out the worst in the entire system. And so when you look at the consolidation, the commissioners a number of years ago chose to purchase all of the carts. So you're going to see that come as well. So when you look at when you invest, you continue to provide a tremendous product. I think to Bruce's point, you know, this, we try to walk this fine line between a level of operational profitability and then a level of subsidy from the capital stack side of things in order to preserve these. And when you look at Sleepy Hollow, we'll turn 100 years old this year. And so they've been part of the system, you know, for quite a number of years.
Yeah, I get it. Well said.
And President Moore, if I can add, you're right. We are competing, but I would say we're not just competing, we're winning. I don't know. I'm not a member of a private course. I don't know of many private courses whose rounds of golf played is up 17%. I don't know about public courses that are up 17%. So we are really doing a great job of providing a product and then putting people in on the courses using that product.
And people love the
golf. And they love it.
They love them.
Yeah. Not to beat on it, but I mean, also what is, to me, it's sort of sophisticated is that we actually have trade secret information about the marketing we do for all our golf courses. So, I mean, the net result is that we're really providing exceptional service to the public, and yet we are competing. I mean, it's trying to leverage those public dollars for public benefit. Mm-hmm.
Good.
That was all I had in the finance report for the calendar year 2023. This is on a cash basis. Our auditors come in and start their field work next week. So in a few months, you'll be getting your GAAP basis financial statements. So you'll see a little bit different perspective where, as Brian just pointed out, instead of everything being absorbed as an expense at once, it'll be amortized out. So you'll be able to see some things a little bit differently.
Very good. Thank you very much. Brian, the CEO report here.
Very good. The first action item is the 2024 budget adjustment number one. And Wade.
Thank you, Brian. Commissioners, on page 11 is budget adjustment number one. It's for $41,047,474. This is to reallocate all of the various capital projects that are going on right now. The best example would be the two Mandel grants that came in for almost $13 million that were received last year. We have the money, but we have to go ahead and reappropriate so we can continue to do that work, as well as all of the other projects, whether they be bridge work, other designated revenue sources. So we just have to reappropriate those. I would ask your approval.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
The next is request for approval to amend the police special detail fees and the 2024 user rates and fees. This is something that we were working on, kind of collapsing data from all departments. We found out that the market had shifted and moved, and we weren't as competitive, and we were struggling to fill a lot of the special details that go through the park district that require police labor. So we're moving the recommended action just to move from 45 to 55 for officers and 65 per hour per supervisors, which is paid for by the event that will actually use the service. So no net cost to the department. Recommended action falls on the top portion of page 12.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next is this designation of 2024 legislative consultant. We have worked with Capital Consulting back through almost, this will be the 14th year. We've had very good success with them. We have a number of capital asks sitting in front of the state legislator between the capital budget, the governor's fund, and then the one-time appropriation of the 700. So we're working very diligently to find pathways for financial support for the park district. The installments are $2,700 per month for a total annual fee of $33,000. Recommended action falls on the top portion of page 13.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Next is the amendment to contract 1615 professional services agreement. This is the shoreline project at the lakefront. We've continued to work with KS consulting KS Work to provide this project, bringing it to fruition, the bidding phase, construction phase, and then it will also include the project closeout. This is for the shoreline revetment near the volleyball courts. Recommended action falls in the top portion of page 14 for the KS Associates.
But Brian, what explain what that's going to be. So there'll be, will it just be a bluff, or will there be, there won't be sand where the volleyball courts are?
No, the volleyball courts, we're trying to sustain them.
Yeah.
And so this is a shoreline. It's some, I don't want to call it newer, but it's technology. And Sean can explain it just maybe a little bit deeper, but it's more naturalized from what I understand. Sean, is that?
So is it riprap with vegetation mixed or?
Thank you, Brian. Good morning, commissioners. So we are working through a process to reinforce the shoreline through natural features using bioengineering, and it's actually going to be a model project for the Ohio Department of Natural Resources. So we'll use big timbers, we'll lock in stones with those timbers, and then that way it's a combination of both a kind of a hard solution and a natural solution at the same time.
So will you be able to climb over it into the water? Probably not.
I mean, we're not really inviting that. You,
yeah,
you could if you're nimble, but the point is to.
I'm not nimble.
It's really to be more naturalized versus it's a nature-based concept instead of just plunking the big stones and then having the reverb going back.
How long does the wood last?
So we'll probably get 10 to 15 years out of the wood, and we expect not to have to reinstate the wood because the whole point of putting in the wood and some of the willow stakes, it'll collapse on itself and also then help regenerate, you know, other natural features that will grow into the bluff side itself.
Cool.
Thank you.
Move to approve.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
The next is the Cleveland Harbor West Pier Repair Memorandum of Understanding. This is working with the Army, the federal government. They own the West Pier, which extends to Wendy Park. This has been one of the, I would call, areas of concern for a number of years from the Metroplex standpoint of continuing to gain access to the historic Coast Guard station. It's approximately 1,320 feet long. Really, we're looking at the work to start in the spring of 2024 at the cost to the Army Corps. We need an MOU with them. We are also working very diligently the cost to put electric and other utilities out there, because right now the site itself has no running water, electric, or anything. So we're looking at how do we collaborate with them. So in a project cost of up to $350,000 to work with their design team to put it in a concrete trough to take it out there and then potentially disconnect it during the winter months so that we don't have to worry about freezing and thawing and other things. From a sustainability standpoint, they have been excellent to work with. We're very pleased that the Cleveland Harbor West Pier repair will go forward. There will be very limited access. I would say almost no access for a good period of time, but we're working very hard to coordinate all of the work. Recommended action falls in the top portion of page 15.
Brian, a quick question on that. Will that allow us to legitimately move trucks across, heavy trucks? Or
I haven't actually gotten the load rating yet, and I think I would use the words define heavy. So it will be stabilized again. So the exact weight, I don't know that we've actually gotten what tonnage we can drive across yet.
But right now, that's a wood timber structure, isn't it?
That is correct.
So are they going to put concrete in, or?
I haven't actually heard what the actual what the construction will actually be.
But that's not our responsibility.
That is correct.
Perfect.
Yep, the feds are going to handle that.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
The next is the award of a single source 6825 Heritage Pot Dock. This is a collision repair. A little while back, the MV Courage was backing out and ended up causing damage. It is at the cost to them, but we had to go through an analysis of all of the work that needed to be done. And basically work to restabilize this particular project. And so we have worked diligently with our construction folks at Shermer, and this is to be paid for by the contractor with Shermer. Board action falls in the bottom portion of 16.
Brian, the scary part of this is that's a hell of a lot of money for 8 docks, isn't it? I mean, that's the scary part about this. These marine construction, it's pricey.
Got it. Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next is the tabulation of award and bids. They fall through the top portion of page 18 all the way through 25. Management services for Manikiki, we just had a clarification on the term for the amount of capital investment. It was for one specific time frame, not multiple year contributions. Shoreline, mower, marine fuel for 2024, utility tractor, and Student Conservation Association for trails.
Brian, one thing on the student conservation, is that a nonprofit organization?
I believe they operate yeah. underneath that, but their exact charter, I don't know.
That is fairly pricey, isn't it? But it's contributing to education. Are these Clevelanders that do this?
The recruitment comes through that, where they all get sourced from. If they can be sourced here locally, great. If not, then they use their national network to bring folks in. I would say it's one of the most successful programs, you know, from the trail building. The amount of people that come in, the knowledge that's here, the knowledge that people bring in, and the growth of it, we're really seen as a more of a national model for how we've handled these trails. Jim's here in the back, and he has done a phenomenal job really shepherding kind of the new concepts. You know, when you look at My Mountain Trail that they went through, the work that they did at the Eastern Ledge Trail over in Euclid, they are really very helpful and beneficial. And part of our mission, I think, is, you know, expanding conservation. And we're doing that through that part. And only to the Emerald Necklace Fund, trails still continue to be one of the strongest supported from philanthropy, from outside dollars. So we try to roll those dollars into it as well.
And it's a lot cheaper than hiring a construction company, isn't it, by a long shot?
Yeah, I think there's always this balance, Dan, you know, when you look at the mechanics of actually building a trail, you know, further, farther, faster. But, you know, when you've got the environment of roots and trees and you're trying to really navigate to have those hands on the ground, then I'd be remiss if we say, you know, the amount of volunteers that we get as well to actually help, you know, rake litter or then decommission trails that should never have been in the positions that they were. It's really a nice complementary group to the park district.
Correct. Brian, how long have we been working with the organization?
Off and on for at least the last, I would say, decade. I mean, Jim specifically can probably give the exact number, but we've had different groups kind of over time that have mm-hmm. come through. So under Jim's tutelage, they've managed, and he dressed up, so I'm really glad we got to call him up today.
Happy trails.
Good morning. Yeah. So we've utilized similar groups to SEA as well as SEA, normally bringing them in for short stints, like a 13-week type hitch. And when you look at the mixed result of using contract work, seasonal work, and these work crews on a shorter term basis, from a dollar standpoint, it's pretty much a wash for the most part. With the contractors, yes, we do get equipment productivity, but what we were finding is that for the money we were spending, we would have to go back and do handwork after the fact to fix up, you know, basically what the machines were doing as far as constructing the trail. So we kind of reorganized our thought process and said, okay, let's just bring a group in that comes trained to us. They're hired by this third party, and they bring a national recruitment arm to the whole process as well. And then utilize them for a longer term to more or less get the same amount of work done with the same amount of funding that we've traditionally done using all three types of models in the past.
Yeah, but it's about $35 an hour, so it's correct. It's not cheap.
It is not, but that also includes their training, their equipment, their transportation.
Oh, their equipment company.
Yep. Yes.
Okay, I didn't realize that.
As the property owner, we're required to give them the job assignments and provide any materials that we need to build the project. So if we're going to build a bridge, we provide them with the lumber and the
which we recycle pretty much.
I'm sorry.
Which we recycle pretty much.
Yes, as much as we can.
We're our own source.
Yes. Yeah. Yep. So
that explains it. Thanks a lot, Jim.
Thank you.
Move to approve.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Next is vouchers and payroll. First one, Wade.
Thank you, brother. Commissioners, on page 31, you'll see the first list of vouchers that were paid in December. I attest that the vouchers were reviewed for legality and conformity with their Ohio Revised Code. They total $20,679,823.13. I would ask your approval of resolution 24-01-0001.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
The next is the approval of Arborware. Commissioner Moore will abstain. Wade?
Thanks, Brian. Commissioners, again, we have Resolution 24-01-002. These vouchers were reviewed for legality in conformity with the Iowa Vice Code to Arborware in the amount of $327.86. I'll ask.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All the comments.
Any comments, Marty?
Morning.
Morning.
Once again, major capital expense for a specific enterprise does not show up on their entries, even as it is said to be profitable. The over $500,000 from the Emerald Necklace Marina forklift does not even appear in financials at all. In fact, Emerald Necklace Marina had zero CapEx for all of 2023. In fact, CapEx for all of Enterprise for last year totals mere $43,000. Amazing. That single expense for a single venue is half again the claimed profit for all of Enterprise last year, wiping out any gain. Enterprise admin spent $1.25 million to achieve this. How is this responsible bookkeeping? How can you claim that Enterprise is profitable, run like a business, thus lessening taxpayers' burden? We end up supporting this stuff with levies on tax-paying private businesses who have to compete with Metroparks tax-free status. If you ignore expenses of any kind, then everything will be profitable. Or if those expenses are moved elsewhere, as when Emerald Necklace Restaurant was refurbished to the tune of what, $600,000 to allow catering, etc. Last year's bottom line there, a $4,000 loss. Surprisingly, back in 2016, Enterprise recorded CapEx everywhere and still netted $250,000. Relating this to safety, an additional $36,000 for marina fencing shows the focus on protecting equipment at Emerald Necklace Marina. Yet the proposed basic launch safety improvements might be too expensive. Charging for boat launching means you lose your recreational immunity in case of an accident. Was the pricey new forklift essential? Will the old one be sold off? Similarly, what's being spent to decrease the risk of additional drownings at Wallace Lake? Meanwhile, new Chevy Tahoes on order to keep our police safe. We all want that. These are coming even as 10 or so brand new police cars now sit behind headquarters, apparently not in use. Why is that? We are just now learning that heritage docks were hit last August. A boater friend observed, of course they were hit. They stick out into the river. It'll happen again. Usually you won't even know what boat caused it. So taxpayers will get stuck for that too. But the public only learns about it now. What I find impressive is not so much that Columbus Metro Parks has 28,500 acres, but they manage 13% more land than Metro Parks here on about 80% less money. Granted, the zoo is separate and not all easily compared, but still a remarkably frugal operation. We gave you the money you wanted. Now show us that you are managing it responsibly. Thank you.
Can I ask a question, Rose? The issue of charging for boat launchings, it's done everywhere. Do we give up our immunity if we charge for launching? It doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, we would need to evaluate all the facts of, you know, the situation and what occurred. The recreational immunity, you know, doctrine in Ohio is impacted by whether a fee is assessed. So, but each fact situation is different. We would, you know, give you the advice, you know, under the attorney-client privilege if you're looking for more specific details.
Okay, I see.
I think just to address Marty's concern about the vehicles, we're waiting for the equipment to show up to put them in service. We would have loved them to be in service, you know, a while ago, but because of the snag with supply chain. We are literally waiting for those. So the way we ordered this next batch, we're trying to pre-order everything so they can go in. This is not necessarily the most efficient way, but it's the only way that we have been given based on the way the equipment will come in.
Yeah, understood. Thank you. Any other comments? Let's see, information briefing.
We have one this morning. This is the Raise East Side Trails project. We will have Sarah Burns Meyer and Josiah doing the update for us. Morning, Sarah.
Good morning, commissioners. It's good to see you. It's been a little while. And I want to introduce Josiah Denson. He has not been before this group before. He's a planner that joined our team about a year and a half ago and has been a wonderful addition. Josiah comes from an engineering background and is a graduate of Ohio Northern University. So welcome to Josiah.
Welcome.
We're going to both present this morning on the RAISE project. And so just a little bit of background, and where's the clicker?
It's on
there. Okay, thank you. Oh, it's a new one. Okay. So the RAISE project, we were awarded. Maybe it's not on. There we go. Just a little glitchy. The RAISE grant was an application that we put in coordination with the city of Cleveland and Cuyahoga County based on projects that were derived from the Cuyahoga Greenways Plan. This Cuyahoga Greenways Plan, as you know, is a 50-year vision for trail development across the county. And within it, it identified major critical gaps in connectivity in the network, as well as major regional links and supporting routes. The RAISE program, it's listed up there, Rebuilding American Infrastructure with Sustainability and Equity. It is a follow-on to the TIGER program and the BUILD program. TIGER we had received in 2016. We're able to build the trails on the west side, about a close to $20 million project over there with an almost $8 million grant. So we received the RAISE grant. We received notice of it in November of 2021. It takes a while to get under contract with Federal Highway Administration. We came to you in May of this past year and hired on Chagrin Valley Engineering with Smith Group as a subcontractor. They've been doing work throughout the last 6 months or so, and we've been doing community engagement on this project. So giving you an update on it today, it is a bundle of four planning projects. Two are going through full design and engineering, and two are just going through feasibility, getting ideas on what the preferred route is and costs. Important to note too, this bundle of projects with the Cuyahoga Greenways Plan, there's an ad hoc group called the Cuyahoga Greenway Partners. Commissioners Ranker and Moore have heard about this. It's a group of agencies that all are involved in planning efforts: RTA, City of Cleveland, Cuyahoga County, Cleveland Metro Parks, and others, Bike Cleveland. And that group is trying to move the Cuyahoga Greenways Plan forward, figure out ways to fund and put the best foot forward for, discretionary grant applications. This application was the result of all of those parties agreeing that this was the bundle of projects for the region to submit to the RAISE program. So there was a lot of consistency across organizations to pursue funding for these projects and get these designed, because these are major critical gaps and links in the system. So we've been working forward through the process, community engagement, doing some of the due diligence, looking at survey information. The four projects that are included in the bundle are the Slavic Village Downtown Connector. And let's see if I can highlight there. It's the northern reach of this piece. There's several segments of the Slavic Village Downtown Connector. The middle portion was built as part of one of the contract groups for the Interbell project by ODOT. This section here is under design as part of a concurrent I-77 project. ODOT is going to be building the trail segment there. And Cleveland Metro Parks and the city is working on doing a feasibility and initial layout of that southern segment. So the RAISE grant covers this portion, but there's a lot more work on Slavic Village Downtown Connector. And you can see that it will connect all the way down into Washington Reservation and down to the Towpath Trail. And it kind of serves as the east side version of the Towpath Trail. Also links up to the Morgana Run Trail. This has been in place for a dozen or so years. That trail managed by City of Cleveland, a part of the RAISE grant, is this Morgana Run extension to connect that into Garfield Park Reservation near Mill Creek Falls. And then you can see that it connects all the way into Garfield Park. And then this little piece here is the Garfield Boulevard connector, which will be going to construction this spring. So we're creating a nice big loop here, a lot of connections. Opportunity Corridor connector. This is one that's just going through that feasibility review, looking at what's possible. And this trail actually takes on a little bit of the identity of a prior plan for the Slavic Village Downtown Connector using the RTA rail corridor, very similar to the Red Line Greenway on the other side of the river. This alignment here utilizes the connection to the Opportunity Corridor Trail that just kind of dead ends you at East 55th and doesn't connect you into downtown. So there's a lot of property work and negotiations that would have to happen for this trail to be able to be pursued. And so we're doing that first part of it was as part of the RAISE study. Final piece here, Euclid Creek Greenway extension. We opened up in November phases 1 and 2 of the extension over here. We have funding to do the piece up to St. Clair that you'll see on another map. And it's doing the RAISE grant is providing that feasibility level review, that alignment choice to get you all the way to the lakefront. And again, we have funding for close to half of that in place for actual construction as well. So there's a lot of connections that are being made out of the RAISE grant. And where we are in the timeline. So as I mentioned, got the consultant on board, have been doing a lot of work with the community, going out with public engagement, getting feedback. All of these trails have been looked at over the years as part of various planning processes, individual planning studies, transportation for livable communities initiative plans, as well as state trail plans, and the Cuyahoga Greenways. But we wanted to make sure, since we were looking drilled down at these alignments, that we were making sure we were checking it with the community and stakeholders and making sure we were getting it right. So this is about where we are in the process right now. We're going to have feasibility reports, those preferred alignments, coming through in the next several weeks. And then the two projects, Slavic Village Downtown Connector, Morgana Run, will go into the kind of final design engineering stage. And then a little bit different with Euclid Creek Greenway, not as part of the RAISE grant, but the City of Cleveland, which is a full partner in this project, is on the project team working hand in hand with us on this. They authorized an additional $500,000 to complete the design on the Euclid Creek Greenway. So that won't be part of this RAISE contract, but we plan to basically roll right into the final design on that project. So that's a lot of information, and then I'm going to pass it off to Josiah to show you some of the more detailed information on the individual routes very briefly. We do have all of this information and a whole lot more, all of the engagement materials, mapping, some really cool aerial flyovers that actually draw the route on the ground, kind of from a bird's eye view that you can see and visualize what the trail could look like. But Josiah has the pretty picture, so I'm going to hand it over to him. Oh, shoot, one more. So I talked about the engagement that we've done on it, and here's just a summary. A lot of going into the neighborhoods to make sure that we are reaching people who will be using these trails and making sure that we're getting it right. And with the RAISE program, it's the transportation focus of it, of making these connections, but also what can be done to make these special places for the community, to help lift them up, to help incentivize and encourage economic development, infill development, those sorts of things.
All right, thanks Sarah for that introduction and providing good context for all of this. So I'll try to go as quickly as I can through each of these four projects. Morning commissioners, nice to meet you. So the first one I'm going to talk about is the Slavic Village Downtown Connector piece. So as Sarah talked about, this is sort of connecting an existing piece of Slavic Village downtown connector that was built by ODOT down here up into downtown. We looked at a lot of different routes for this connection. The first two rounds of engagement kind of informed narrowing it down to sort of this Broadway alignment that goes along Broadway Road here, shown in blue. All of these listed criteria were created and helped us determine the routes using feedback from all of our public engagement. And then another thing to note here is that RTA is performing a transit-oriented design or development study along Broadway in this corridor that would work nicely with our trail. They're on our project team and providing feedback as we go. So this is sort of a typical cross-section of what the trail might look like along Broadway. So for all of these trails, we want to make sure that they're separated facilities protected from traffic on the road. None of these are going to be sort of bike lanes in the road, and we want to make sure they're separated and protected. And in this section and a lot of sections of Broadway, we'd be sort of doing what's called a road diet and squeezing down the lanes a little bit and resizing, maybe reorienting some of the lanes, but retaining the current capacity of the road. This is just a typical cross section of what it looked like, what it might look like going across a couple of the bridges that are along the route. And they have some excess lane capacity. So we're working through design right now to squeeze the road down a little bit and provide room for the trail. So the next piece nearby is the Opportunity Corridor connector. So once again, as Sarah mentioned, this is a lot to look at, but this is connecting the Opportunity Corridor trail, which is shown over here in purple. That sort of just ends here at the East 55th RTA station and doesn't go anywhere after that, heading west. And we want to connect that portion up into downtown and into the Slavic Village downtown connector. So this one is just going through feasibility. We're still working through a lot of different options, as you can see. There's a lot of real estate complications in coordination with various entities and property owners here. But it's an important connector to downtown. And it also does a sort of unique thing that it connects two RTA rapid stations to each other, which is unique. So we're doing a little bit more due diligence on this route specifically that takes that kind of dips down into the RTA rail corridor, sort of like the Red Line Greenway. It would be adjacent to the tracks. It has a little bit more space down there. We have a couple photos after this that I'll show you, but this piece was actually part of the original Slavic Village downtown connector study, and we're trying to, but this one would tie into the East 55th station, as I mentioned, and the downtown connector once built. So we actually took a site visit out there a couple months ago. It was a really cool experience. It has some really unique views and a cool sort of trail experience. So think of the Red Line Greenway, but with a little bit more space in most places. And it has some unique views of the industrial valley on the side, which is pretty cool. Even more so the Red Line Greenway, it has that ability to directly connect two of the rapid stations and connect through them as well.
And it would be a much more natural looking trail, mm-hmm. wouldn't it?
Yeah, there's a good amount of foliage on here.
What does it look like the cost difference would be between the two?
We're not quite there yet, but we're working through all of that as we do the feasibility study.
Oh, that how new he is, Dan, and he just didn't commit to a price to you. Still looking at it.
But I would think that would be not only more natural, more fun to ride, but also potentially less expensive.
Potentially, we'll see.
Yeah. Okay.
So to keep moving, the next one is the Morgana Run Booth Avenue extension. In that kind of bigger context map, Sarah was showing the Morgana Run trail that exists up here now. So we'd be connecting that sort of southeastern portion of the trail that ends right here down to what is the Mill Creek Falls area of Garfield Park Reservation. There were two main routes that we had to take. This one is a little bit simpler. It wasn't as much of a spaghetti mess looking at all of the routes. One route was East 91st Street, which is kind of bubbled to the top. And then the other one was East 93rd. 93rd is a little bit busier, a little bit more truck traffic. This is a little quieter. And one of the main features of this is that it uses the Booth Avenue underpass that goes under the Norfolk Southern Railroad here that's sort of the separating boundary between the Slavic Village and Union Miles neighborhoods. And it's a cool little tunnel that used to be used for pedestrians and cars, but was closed down a number of years ago and is sort of in disrepair right now. But as a part of this project, we would improve it and make it a cool little pass through for this trail. So the 91st option sort of mirrors feedback from earlier plans and studies that were done in this area, but it also bubbled to the top from the public engagement that we did through this project. So this is a basic rendering of that tunnel that goes under the railroad that I was talking about. So we would be using the prior vehicle side of this tunnel with improvements. The other pedestrian side isn't quite big enough to get through there comfortably on a bike, but we're coordinating with the railroad right now to sort of figure out what that would look like. This is a cross section on Booth Avenue, sort of just east of the tunnel, in a couple blocks of that neighborhood where there aren't any residences. So we're actually looking at closing down the road to traffic here on these couple of blocks and making it just a bike and pedestrian trail with a more robust greenway experience. And then this is another example of what it might look like on the bridges in the area. This is again a couple bridges that have a lot of excess capacity in lanes that they aren't really using or there's not really a purpose for, so we would be able to squeeze it down without really affecting traffic. But we're performing traffic studies for all of these as well. So the final one, Euclid Creek Greenway Extension. This is a really cool one in that we're finally attempting to connect our two pieces of the Euclid Creek Reservation. So this one would follow the recently completed Euclid Creek Greenway Phase 1 and 2 projects that were completed late last year. The pink segment here is to be used by both of the options. And then there's sort of two main options that came out of our public engagement, one following Nottingham Road here and one going along Neff Road. We're working through a traffic study that was recently conducted to help inform our decisions here and what sort of impacts it might have if we have modifications to how traffic works in the tunnels that go under the railroad here. And we're having another round of public engagement in February. So this is on that pink section along Chardon Road, just north of the recently completed Euclid Creek Greenway Phase 2. And this is looking at the crossing of the railroad. We're doing coordination with Norfolk Southern on this railroad crossing right now, but this portion of the trail is actually fully funded for construction so that we know that we can build this piece already. And we're just trying to sort of refine the design. So this is looking, and now we're split into the two route options. This is looking at the Neff option, which is the eastern one. So I mentioned traffic impacts. This shows the Neff route and the existing underpass that goes under the railroad there. We would, if we choose this route, we would likely need to close down one of the tunnels to traffic. Right now, each tunnel serves one direction of traffic, and we're looking at potentially closing one down and making it one way. We're not sure which direction yet. The traffic impacts will tell us more. But this route connects directly to the East 185th Commercial District, which is growing and had some work done in there recently. And then this is looking at the northern section of that Neff route that goes through a residential neighborhood on Marcella. This would work actually within the existing right-of-way of the road. It's pretty wide there, and we would just kind of squeeze down the road a little bit.
So you don't need extra property.
So we would not need extra property, and we'd be able to basically expand the sidewalk there and turn that into a trail. And then lastly, the Nottingham Road trail option is that western one on the map that I showed you earlier. So this is looking at the tunnel under the railroad on that option. It's more of an open situation. There's more room for the trail. There's sort of an unofficial two lanes of traffic in each direction. It's not marked that way, but people use it for two lanes in each direction. But it is one lane in each direction. So we would squeeze it down to a more formal one lane in each direction, pending the traffic study, of course. And then that would be able to give us enough space to kind of squeeze the trail in on the side.
Question about the underpasses. I thought I heard somewhere that one of those apparently has really bad drainage issues.
Do you know? That is the NEF side. The CSX bridge over top is extremely old. So that's part of the analysis to see what can be done. And one of the things, the Nottingham underpass was redone not that long ago. So that is in good condition, but it does handle a lot of traffic. The NEF side, because it is such an old bridge, it's substandard. You can't get trucks through it. And so that's one of the things where the traffic impacts might be less from that. But there is drainage work that definitely needs to be done, similar to the Booth underpass. Yeah. Railroads don't necessarily maintain the bridges in the best working condition, as you know, recent articles might attest to.
Thank you.
Thanks, Sarah. So this route that takes this tunnel and then goes towards Nottingham actually utilizes a fairly new pedestrian bridge that goes over I-90 as well.
The one that got taken out a couple of
years. Right, the one that got taken out a couple years ago and was rebuilt recently. So this looks at that northern section of this route that goes on Nottingham. And this is actually like a historic brick road. And the right-of-way is not quite wide enough here. So there would be some property impacts. It's a similar experience to Marcella, but since we would need to make agreements with homeowners and do some sort of easement situation, it would be significantly more complicated to.
How many lots?
We're studying that now, but.
Yeah, and seeing if there's options to have less of an offset road since it's curved and.
Yeah.
But there are numerous.
Yeah.
We don't have a count though of the number of actual individual properties.
We will in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
The team is laying that out right now and doing the calculations too. There's utilities that would also need to be relocated. And the right of way, tree ones are varying distances. It's a very good street. So
yeah.
There's some
beautiful street.
Yes, mm-hmm. It's very beautiful, but we're looking at what are the minimum impacts that we could have here.
Yeah.
Trees, utility poles. You know, how far we would need, where in pinch points, maybe we could wiggle the trail a little bit closer to the road, things like that. So we're working through all of that as this, you know, culling through the different options, taking things off the table. We've narrowed down the focus and are now doing that deeper dive and working with the city of Cleveland and partners, stakeholders too.
That's going to be critical because it could work very well to those residences, but. It's touchy.
So we're interested to see how it all shakes out. But that's about all we have for today. So yeah, Sarah mentioned that we have a website with all kinds of information. So if you have more questions, feel free to ask or check that out. But thanks for your time.
Thank you.
What a great presentation. And I love the fact that you're focusing in on options that you would have that we wouldn't have normally considered. Natural environment stuff is really nice.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And again, I think I really want to go back to the Cuyahoga County Greenway print plan. Getting the community's buy-in from regionally is more significant than I think we give our region credit for. When you look at other parts of the country, I don't know anybody that's gone through this extensive of a planning network, and but it really aligns you to be successful in your funding opportunities on the pre-end and then going through after to actually receive the funding. And so when you look at partners like WACA, the city, Councilman Polensic, and others, when everybody starts going in the same direction, that's how these projects come to fruition. When you start to look at the map, as Commissioner Morneau says, nobody wants to go in, out and back anymore. They want these loops. And so when you look at how we're trying to complete them, it's regionally significant. And that's a really big deal in the partnership and the work that this team has done is truly remarkable. So we're very appreciative of the effort that's put in behind the raise, and we're very appreciative of the federal government for these funding opportunities as we go through to really make this, when we talk about whether you're 8 years old or 80, an 8-minute walk to a park, we're trying very hard to continue to push connecting communities to the park district. So that was the last information item. There is no old business. The next regular scheduled meeting is Thursday, February 15th, and there is no executive session.
Do we have a motion for adjournment?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
See you next month.
Thank you all.